Welcome to the Raw and Uncensored Ambitious Podcast. During our time here together, I will be instilling all of the strength, power, and determination you will need to use the very stones thrown at you to build your ultimate empire. We will redefine the word bitch from the derogatory to the acronym being in total control of herself. So let's adjust our crowns and prepare to live life ambitiously.
Yeah, here I am, the original HBIC, Katie motherfucking Boyd. And on today's episode of the Ambitious Podcast, we have one of my favorite humans walking this earth, Autumn Bear, and she is back for round two. And we are going to get into some nitty gritty about long COVID syndrome, which is mind blowing to me. So without further ado, let's get into it with Autumn Bear. Autumn, thank you so much for being back on the podcast so soon. Are you sick of me yet?
Not yet. I came back for more. I couldn't get enough.
You're a maniac.
No.
So on our last podcast, I had so many people reach out to me because you had just briefly kind of brushed over like the long COVID syndrome. And so many people started kind of, you know, going out and doing their own research. And they were like, holy shit, like this is a thing. And there's so many things about long COVID syndrome that there's symptoms that I have been dealing with. And I'm getting gaslit by my medical doctor. They're telling me I'm cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. I need to go get on some meds, or I need to, you know, get on some other kind of medicine. And you're saying that, no, dude, it could be long COVID syndrome.
Yeah.
So let's like get into it, man. I am like pumped for this because I can't tell you how many people have reached out to me about this. So, you know, you're in high demand, my friend.
High demand. Well, it's something that I think we're in a little bit of a tough spot right now because we're really learning a lot about COVID in general. We're kind of outside of that immediate emergency phase where, you know, we were all in lockdown and all of these things were happening. And at that time, we were really just in that survival mechanism of trying to make it through. There's obviously a lot of things that have come since then. Obviously, vaccines have come up from that. And, you know, we obviously are catching it in different ways and treating it in different ways. But the biggest challenge that I'm seeing is when COVID ends up sticking around, hence the term long COVID. And it's something that we kind of weren't expecting, but are seeing a lot of, at least I'm seeing a lot of it clinically. I was just actually doing a little bit of research right before coming on here. And they are saying that 6.9% of the American population, which is 333.3 million people, 6.9% of Americans have long COVID. That is approximately 24 million people. That is a huge number. It's right?
It's mind blowing.
Yeah, it's mind blowing. And you know, the challenge of long COVID is not that it is an immediate life-threatening ailment. It is a debilitating, long-term, chronic illness that has come about as a result of COVID. But the challenge of it is that most people, you know, when they go to the doctor, they go in, they have lab work done. And the challenge is the lab work looks quote unquote normal.
Yes.
But they, you know, the amount of people that are on disability, the amount of people that can't show up for their families. I mean, the ripple effect is absolutely enormous. It's 6.9% of the population. But think about all the people that 6.9% represents. That's their families and all the people that depend on them. That's our economy. Think about, you know, if 24 million people in our country can't work because of long COVID, that's an enormous hit to our economy. So we're looking at like the effects of it are just, you know, continuing to ripple across multiple platforms. And so we have to say to ourselves like, okay, when, you know, especially me, you know, I'm in the alternative world. And so I'm not a person who's prescribing drugs. I'm not a person who's looking at this from a pharmacological standpoint. So I'm trying to think of, well, how can we get these people better so that they can graduate back into the world and function in the way they need to function and be the great people that they are? And so that's what I've been tackling in my practice over the last, you know, call it 3.5 years. And with some pretty good success, I might add. So, you know, and we're learning a lot. I mean, obviously, like anybody, I don't have all the answers, but I have learned a lot. I have learned a lot.
Autumn, when did you start seeing people come in with these symptoms? And you were like, dude, I think this is long COVID.
Yeah.
Was there like a time period that you started seeing these things pop up?
Yeah. Actually, so because I was in New York City in the first round of COVID, you know, the infection in New York was right around March of 2019. Mm-hmm. And so by the time I got back into my office, somewhere around July of 2019, I was already starting to see some of my regular patients who had been seeing me before came back and they were like, Autumn, I have the weirdest things going on after I got COVID, and I keep going to all the doctors and they keep telling me that there's nothing wrong, but I'm, you know, so everything from, you know, brain fog, mental fatigue, memory loss, intermittent fevers is a really big one, like this weird temperature regulation or dysregulation in the body, you know, chronic cough, sleep started to be disrupted, digestive disruption, all these things started to happen. And so we were really seeing it within the first, you know, after the first round of COVID. I mean, that
was. So March 2020, COVID comes to our country. And then right. By July, you are like, oh, there's something, there's a correlation here.
Well, it just happened to be that, you know, I'm seeing these people who I used to see before COVID, and then right. I saw them after COVID, and they definitely had stuff going on. And so I had that relationship with my patients where I knew, you know, they're not lying
weird.
To me. Yeah, it's weird. It was totally weird. And so so that became kind of the mission at that juncture. And then you fast forward, you know, it wasn't until I came to Utah, I started working on traumatic brain injuries and post-traumatic, you know, concussive disorders and things like that. And there's this thing called dysautonomia. And dysautonomia is basically when the autonomic system, so the autonomic system is our non-voluntary control system. So it controls our sleep cycles, our digestive cycles, our heart rhythms, our body temperature control, all the things that we just
don't have to think about.
We just don't have to think about. It just goes automatically. So after you have a brain trauma, there are many people who end up with this dysautonomia. And then as we're starting to see more and more clinical cases of long COVID, what we're starting to see is that long COVID looks just like dysautonomia. So all of a sudden we're looking at this kind of dysregulation of the autonomic system and we're like, why? Right. And then you add on top of that, you know, chronic coughs. Some people have it, some people don't, but really, you know, what I'm seeing by and large is, you know, people who have digestive issues, sleep cycle disruption, brain fog, fatigue, like, I'm not talking fatigue, like,
I'm tired. Just tired.
No, I'm talking like, you know, will sleep 16 hours, get up, can barely function, need a nap or two, and then do it all over again. I mean, we're talking like, you can't hold a job down.
No, how can you take care of your family? How can you work? How can you do anything?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And wow. So, yeah. And so we, you know, obviously end up seeing like all of these presentations. And then and then as I'm looking at it, you know, from a dysautonomia perspective, I'm thinking, hey, wait a minute. I've seen this, right? Like I've seen this presentation with a little bit of a twist, right? And so in Chinese medicine, you know, we look at viruses very differently than the way that the Western model looks at viruses. And when we have an infection, you know, versus a brain trauma, right? If you have a brain trauma, there could be some, you know, mechanical damage that's been done in the trauma that may be causing this dysregulation. And so therefore, fixing that dysregulation might be a little bit more challenging. However, with a virus, because of the way that it has a response from the body, and because it's such a an acute, it's more of like an acute trauma, right? Like you have this, you know, virus, it hits and usually the body clears most of it, right? So then when you have this lingering effect, the way that we look at it in Chinese medicine is usually we're trying to figure out why the body can't clear it, right? What is it about the underlying mechanism of that person's body that we need to then elicit some sort of a healing response, right? And that's usually what we're trying to do.
And the other thing, the thing that I thought was interesting, I had a woman on, her name is Becky Nolan, and she specifically deals with Lyme disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when she was talking about Lyme, how it hides itself in certain parts of your body and your cells, different tissues and things like that, it kind of clicked my head kind of went to what you talk about, what you're just saying right now, is like, we don't really know everything we need to know about the COVID virus, right?
Totally. Yeah.
So in my head, and I'm not a doctor and I don't play one on television, but I'm a pretty smart bitch. So I'm like, what if this virus is almost like a Lyme type thing where it hides itself or it burrows or yeah. I mean, who knows, right?
So, well, we do know. That is
the good part.
Yeah. Yeah. So the NIH just came out with a study, like maybe over the last couple months, I want to say. And there's a couple of things that we're seeing both clinically and what they're seeing and whatever research it was that they were doing, in that COVID can in fact lay latent in the body, in the tissues, in the tissues of the body, primarily the gut. That seems to be where it's like hiding out, hanging out.
Interesting.
But what also happens is that COVID, for whatever reason, whatever mechanism that it has, also seems to kick into gear other latent viruses like Lyme's or like Epstein-Barr, which is mono, right? Mm-hmm. Which would, you can look at that and you think, well, no wonder people are so tired, because if they had any sort of underlying virus that was also hanging out. And so now you have a latent COVID that's hanging out in there. It's just reaping, you know, the benefits of being in your tissues. And then it also kicks into gear some other latent viruses. You're almost, you know, tag teaming with these multiple viruses going on that become active.
And it could just be a diathesis stress that could be like a stressful time in your life, maybe a loss of a loved one or your divorce or whatever, something that's physically, mentally stressful or some kind of diathesis stress could kick this into gear. And then all of a sudden you have all these symptoms that you're like, where the hell did this come from?
Well, most of the time when someone has had COVID, long COVID starts to present itself within, you know, they just don't completely get better, right? It's not like, you know, and some people will kind of get a little bit better and then it's just, they can't quite kick it. And then around the 3 month mark, they've got this, they're just like, I'm exhausted. And then by the 3 month mark, because it's so long past their initial infection, they keep thinking like, what's going on? Why am I so tired? Why? And that's when they start going into the doctors and are like, can I get some blood work? And I'm not right. And things are not right. And so that's what we're seeing, is that, you know, I think a lot of the people who are predisposed, and predisposition is a really interesting conversation to have around long COVID. But for whatever reason, those people who seem to be predisposed to the long COVID virus, they just never seem to get rid of it. And in fact, it just starts to get worse as it kicks up these other viruses along the way. And so that's what really becomes the challenge. You know, it's not the initial infection, it's how long it sticks around and then how it kicks things back into gear.
And with your clients, have you noticed that there is like a correlation with these people having these symptoms going to the doctors? The doctors don't know what it is. So then they kind of gaslight them, or they're like, oh, well, your blood work is normal. So, you know, maybe just like get a little bit more sleep, go on a vacation, take some time off from work. Have you seen that kind of, that kind of thing happening?
Yeah. I mean, this is the biggest challenge, is that clinically, these patients are not presenting with anything life-threatening, right? So they're going in and it's all underlying things, you know, and it's not like you can just go in to the doctor and be like, okay, yeah, my lab work is great, but this fatigue that I'm feeling is so enormous. And there's not a lot of Western medicine that's going to be able to affect that, right? And so, you know, obviously I don't think it's for lack of trying, but I do think because of the clinical presentation, it lends itself to be a lot harder to diagnose. I think, you know, the average person with dysautonomia, you know, when you're just talking about dysautonomia, the average person who has dysautonomia, it takes them 7 years to get an actual diagnosis.
Oh,
so that means
gosh,
they have been run, you know, because of their multi-symptom dysfunction, because they have cardiovascular symptoms and they've got, you know, digestive and, you know, gastrointestinal, you know, they're basically being funneled. Oh, well, if you have cardio, then you should go to cardiologist. If you've got gastro, you should go to gastroenterologist, right? If you've got like other stuff, maybe you need to see the rheumatologist, but the blood work never comes back bad enough that a lot of times they can't get in to see a specialist because nothing is showing that it's presenting itself clinically. they don't have enough presentation to be taken seriously because it's not life threatening, right? And so a lot of times these people are going in over and over and over and they're like, no, but you don't understand. I don't feel good. And then because they've seen everybody and they keep going back for more, this is the part, the tricky bit, right? Is then it's almost like there's a disbelief that the person is experiencing the things that they're experiencing, right? because the lab work's not showing anything. And they can't see a specialist, but they keep coming back over and over and over.
So it gets to be like Munchausen-y, like, oh, this person, like, have, you know, because that's what a lot of people think. You know what's crazy that you're talking about this? After I had COVID, because I only had COVID one time, it was after Thanksgiving when all of my family got together, all the little kids, and we hadn't seen each other, right? And I had been perfectly healthy. You know, I'm like you, I take care of myself, the supplements, the whole nine yards, the acupuncture, the this, the that.
Right.
And then my family comes over. And then like a couple days later, Matt and I are like, oh fuck. Like we got it, dude.
We got it.
I mean, we went and got tested, but I was like, this is it. I couldn't taste anything. I was like, oh my God, if I'm never going to taste anything ever again, just kill me now. Because you know, fat kids like to taste delicious food. I mean, it's one of the wonderful pleasures of life, right?
Yeah.
But right after that, I was in a healing session and I had this pain hit me in my stomach, like right in my diaphragm, and it went down my left arm. Mm-hmm. And I went to the doctor because I was like, oh my God, I'm having a heart attack. Because, like, you know, you don't hear that kind of stuff. And I for like almost a year got bounced from specialist to specialist to specialist. And, you know, I do everything. I do, you know, all the stuff for leaky gut. I do my bone broth. I do all my like supplements. I do all of that kind of stuff. I don't eat, you know, stuff with glyphosate, any of that. Right.
Yeah.
And I dealt with this and I ended up having to like bend, which, you know me, I'm not like a medicine person. I bent and I went to a gastro and they were like, oh, you just have like extreme GERD. So they put me on omeprazole for like, you know, and the side effects of omeprazole are, I think, worse than the actual, what it does for your stomach. Right. And then like one day it just like went away and it never came back again. But I had never had a stomach problem in my entire life.
Yeah.
Until right after. And so you don't have to diagnose me, but do you think that those types of things could be like this side effect from like almost like a long, because it went on for like a year after COVID?
Well, and I think this is the challenge, right? It's like anytime you have major stuff going on, obviously you want to go check it out at the doctor. This is a non-negotiable, right? Like stuff's going wrong, you go into the doctor,
right?
And you go, okay, here's what's going on, and they do the tests and they do all the stuff. I think the biggest challenge for long COVID is it's not whether or not they have symptoms that they can go in and see the doctors about. The problem is that they have multi-system dysfunction, where meaning multiple aspects of their body are going kind of wackadoodle. They go to the specialist, but nothing is clinically showing. They get kind of spat out on the other side, and everybody's like, I don't know. Right.
Yeah.
And that's really where it starts to, get interesting. Is it, of course it's possible for, you know, stomach pain to be a side effect. I mean, we know that COVID has a gastrointestinal element. One of the first symptoms they asked about when we were first going through COVID was whether or not you had, you know, diarrhea, right? Because that was one of the presentations. It didn't start with a cough. In fact, a cough came later.
Yes.
Usually it started as some sort of gastrointestinal distress. And then 2-3 days in is when the fever, or like maybe they'd have gastrointestinal 1 or 2 days and then the fever would kick in, right? Yep. And so, and that's not really a big surprise from the medical community or from the Chinese medical community, because in Chinese medicine, the large intestine and the lungs are partner pairs. So when you have a virus that hits either the lungs or the large intestine, you will often see symptomology on the other side. So those, when those things were starting to come out in COVID, you know, all of us were like, it was like, oh yeah, that makes so much sense. But, you know, I think what's really interesting about this virus is, you know, when we talk about it hanging out in the gut, you know, 75% of our immune system is actually in our gut.
Yes.
Right? How our behavior is in our gut. And in fact, I've been doing this massive deep dive into the gut and its kind of microbiome and looking at all the different aspects of the microbiome. Because when you look at a virus that seems to hang out in the gut, we have to figure out, hey, how do we kick this, right? Yeah. How do we get rid of it without sabotaging and annihilating our gut biome, yes. right? And that's a really, really important factor because we don't want to leave people susceptible to other infection and other mm-hmm. diseases and, you know, like antibiotic resistance and all those types of things happen as a result of those kind of incessant uses of antibiotics.
Right.
And the hard part is with a virus, those antibiotics are not helping, right? So how do we dive into that gut biome and say, okay, how are we going to approach this virus that obviously has this two-prong effect of, you know, both a lung component and a digestive component, and how do we kick it out once it's been in there for too long?
Right, right.
You know, yeah.
And to your point, when you're talking about Western medicine, it must, after a while, when you're going through this as a human, you must get so frustrated and so almost depressed and feel like there's no hope because you're just getting sent to person to person to person because right. no one doctor is going to treat you holistically. Whereas right. Chinese medicine looks at the whole system, the whole human
right.
in its entirety. And it probably is a quicker fix doing it that way yeah. than going from thing to thing to thing. And, you know, the girl Becky that I was talking about, who's phenomenal, the Lyme disease specialist, she did this happen to her for 12 years before she yeah. got diagnosed. 12 yeah. years.
Yeah. It's tricky. It's super tricky. And I don't think, you know, and I don't think that the Western model, it's not, you know, the Western model has its challenges, but I know so many physicians, they really do. They want to absolutely make a difference in their patients' lives. I think a lot of them just have their hands tied because, you know, they look at disease, you know, mostly from the perspective of a pharmacological model where they say, okay, if you have these symptoms, here's the drug that's going to match those symptoms. And this right. is what we're going to do. When you have something that's not showing clinically, it's not showing any significance in the blood work. So many, and then you have multiple systems at the same time. You know, a lot of the physicians are just, they're trying to figure it out too. And they're just like, listen, I don't know what it is, but maybe you should try that person. Maybe they know what it is, right? And yes. and ultimately, the frustration, of course, is the hope that someone's going to know what's going on, come to find out that, you know, they go from person to person. They've spent enormous amounts of time, energy, and money going and crossing off all the T's and dotting all the I's. And then at the end, you know, they're like, I am exactly the same place that I started, you know?
Yes.
Which is, that is the frustrating part. And I think that is, you know, when you don't feel well, it's also really hard to go, you know, making the appointments. And, you know, in fact, like my long COVID patients, I have to set extra reminders that ping them before an appointment because there is so much struggle to remember what's going on when they have appointments. You know, because the brain fog is intense, the fatigue is intense, they're not sleeping well. And then, you know, how many of us forget all kinds of little things every day? You add on top of that, you know, this chronic illness that's been going on for months or years, yes. right? Then you add on the frustration and, you know, of course it feels really intense and hopeless, you know?
Of course. Absolutely.
You know.
So let's walk through each one of the symptoms that you've seen. Just so people can get like a real roundabout. So like if they're listening out there from wherever they're listening and they haven't been feeling themselves and they've been kind of struggling with certain things and they've been mm-hmm. bounced around by doctors, that it can have, they can have that light bulb moment like, oh, wow. Okay. Maybe autumn's onto something. So I want to talk about that first. And then the second yeah. thing is any kind of, you know, two cents that you like to give people, like stuff that they can do at home. I know that they can also work yeah. with you and we can talk about that later on in the podcast, but I think that, first the symptoms, then maybe things that are working for people that you're working with, because I know you're working with a ton of people that have long COVID, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then how they can work with you too, because I mean, if you have this, or if you even think that you have this, I think mm-hmm. let's get her done.
Yeah. ASAP. Well, and there are a lot of things that people will get to do at home. And you know, diet and nutrition is one of the things that I focus on primarily. And that is definitely part of the things that people can do for themselves. But you know, when you talk about the symptoms, here's where it gets really tricky, because everybody presents differently. Yeah. Yeah. That is why it is so hard. That's why dysautonomia is so hard, because nobody has the same effects. But if you kind of look at like a generalization, you know, we're talking, you know, definitely massive brain fog, right? Brain fog is one of the primary things that people complain about, whether or not they have a lot of the other symptoms or not. Brain fog is like really like word recall, right? Or, you know, I had this patient come in and, you know, and she was like, I know what the word is, right? Like, I know that I know it. She's like, but I just cannot find the word. So like, you know, she was talking about her gloves, and she's like, you know, like the finger sweaters. Like, she kept saying to me,
I love her.
You know, like, she was trying so hard, and she was like, you know, like the things that keep your hands warm, and like the finger sweaters, you know, like she could recall some things and describe it, but couldn't pick up the word, like gloves. Right. So word recall, memory.
Losing your train of thought, right? A lot of people have been talking about that. Like, they're just like talking, and then they look at me and go, what the fuck was I just talking about? And I'm like, yes. I don't, I'm like, and then I'll tell them, or people will do it to me sometimes. Like, it happened to me the other day. I was like, wait a minute, what was I saying?
That thing? Yep. Yeah. So that's definitely word recall, memory, brain fog, like a lot of these kind of like hazy feelings, you know, the fatigue is really big. I mean, that's a really, really big one. And like I said, it's not like, you know, I worked 10 hours, you know, and then I went home and I'd take care of the kids and like bath and, you know, and then I was really tired, right? Like, it's, but the difference, right, is when you have resources in your body, you can have long days, you can have hard days, and you can even have a really hard week and get to the end of the week and be like, whew, I am spent. I need a day off, right? Like, and you take the day, and then you're rejuvenated and you're kind of back and ready to roll. And you're like, all right, I'm ready to tackle this next week. It's not like that.
That never happens.
No.
They don't rejuvenate and come back better.
There's no bounce. There's no bounce. Yeah. Yes. You know, like, and it's like, there's no bounce in anything. It's just like this level of kind of, you know, subclinical malaise that hits, and then they just can't seem to kind of like pull, right? They just can't pull it up. It's just, there's no resources to get the engines going.
I've had so many clients that have been saying to me lately, I feel like I'm in a dream state.
Right.
Like, I feel like I'm just walking from like room to room.
Right.
Like, what am I doing here? I have no gumption. I have no purpose. They feel like lost. A lot of people are even like nihilistic. Like, what is the point of life? And I'm like, dude, you were never like this before. Like, what? And there's nothing specific that happened in their life, that like a divorce, a loss of a child. There's nothing crazy that would make someone that way and be like, oh, this person today. And then like a month later, I talk to them and they're a totally different person. And I'm like, who? It's like Attack of the Body Snatchers.
Can we talk about that? It's like my favorite thing to talk about. So there's this really amazing podcast I highly recommend, if you haven't, it's called Radiolab. Radiolab has been around forever, and it's a science podcast, but it is so fun and interesting, and they do such an amazing job of tackling different aspects of science, right, and then making it super fun. So about 12 years ago, maybe even longer, they did this one episode called Guts, right? So it's all in the title.
Cool.
So they, you know, they talk about a variety of different things, and then they covered this one story that I thought was particularly interesting, and I think it has complete relevance to what we're talking about now. So they were talking about the use of probiotics, right? And so they were talking about, how do probiotics affect the gut biome? So they did a study on rats. There's this neurobiologist in Cork, Ireland, who decides to study probiotics. So he gives one, you know, group of rats probiotics, the other group of rats doesn't get probiotics. And then they give him a stress test. So rats can swim, but they don't like the water, right? So they put these rats in a tank of water and they let them like swim about. So the group of rats that had no probiotics, after about 4 minutes, they hit something called behavioral despair, which means that the stress hormones in their body got so high that it just basically like fried their little like neurological system, and their whole body was just, right? Like they were done. Like they couldn't figure it out. They were super stressed. They quit. They just, that's it, despair. Mm-hmm. And then they did the same test with a group of rats. So 4 minutes was the max that this non-probiotic group hit. By 8 minutes, the probiotic group, they were still in there, like swimming around, trying to figure it out. But they never hit despair. They actually stopped the test first before these rats hit that element of despair. Wow. And so, yeah. So what they're realizing, and it goes further to talk about the vagus nerve. Now, the vagus nerve is a nerve that goes all the way from your gut up to your brain, right? And it is this highway super nerve center that communicates between the brain and the gut. So what they were able to do was they then fed a group of rats probiotics, knowing, right, okay, we can repeat this test. But they cut the vagus nerve. And what they found was that these rats no longer had that same effect. So what that means is that neurological highway that goes between the gut and the brain is so critical as to what sorts of nutrients and what sorts of signals get sent to the brain in terms of stress hormones. So they took all the stress hormones, and the rats that had the probiotics had half the levels of stress hormones. They had half the level of, it was almost like it rewired their brain. And it was like the brain kept getting these signals. It wasn't that they weren't getting stress signals, but because of the fact that they had these probiotics, the brain was like, it's okay. We can go a little longer, right? Wow. So when you talk about the fact that we know that COVID hangs out in the gut, we know that COVID, if it's hanging out in the gut, is going to have some kind of brain effect just based on that neurological highway that we've got going on. So if that's the case, it's not a super big surprise to know that long COVID often really either grossly depletes the resources of the gut. Maybe the person didn't have a good gut biome to begin with. But what we know is that probiotics and the gut biome affect behavior. And that kind of like behavioral despair, right, that you're talking about, there's a huge possibility that if they are suffering from long COVID, right, we don't know, we're not diagnosing anybody, but we're just going to say, like, for giggles, like if we were just saying for giggles.
Yes.
If that person's gut biome was affected by a virus, and we know that behavior can be influenced by the gut. Do you know that 80% of our serotonin is in our gut? Serotonin is our happy drugs, right? Yeah. Like that's the stuff that makes our mood happy. Mm-hmm. If 75% of our immune system is in the gut, 80% of our serotonin is in the gut, and we have this like sweet little wire that goes in between the gut and the brain, it just goes to say, like, why aren't we having the discussion about our gut biome and how it relates to long COVID because of this relationship, right? And our mood.
Like, amazing. No, I love this because I know all these things, right? I know that about your gut microbiome. I know all these things. And I work with people every day that have these same, just like you. I'm not an acupuncturist, but I do certain things in my own right that I talk to people about the way that they feel. And I've noticed that this is a huge string. And also, and myself included, I feel like before COVID, I could handle stress much better than I do now. Like I feel like my nervous system is so overloaded that like the smallest thing that would never even tickle my ass, like will send me like off on like a nuclear explosion. And I'm like, I almost like look at myself in the mirror sometimes and go like, who are you? Like, what have you done with Katie? She used to be a cool, calm, collected bitch. And now she's like a messy pig pen bitch. Like she's got like this little cloud of smoke around her all the time where I'm like, you know, but I'm not the only one, Autumn. There's so many people. Oh my God. And strong ass women who I know can handle the most.
Yeah.
Also are feeling the same way. Like just, what is the point of all this? Like nothing's going to get better. Everything's shit. Like, and I'm like, when did we turn into these people?
Right. Well, and we do know, you know, in terms of the health of our gut biome, there's an aspect of kind of like optimal gut biome health. So kind of like when you're young, you have a really good microbiome. That just kind of, I mean, A, you probably haven't, I mean, this is a generalization. Obviously, everybody's right. their own unique little, you know, orbit.
Yes.
But generally speaking, when you're younger, your gut biome is stronger, your enzymes are better, like your digestive system is primed and working. You probably, you know, you're like in your prime. As we age, there's definitely a diminishment of the quality of our gut biome. And there's probably several reasons for that. You know, some of it can be the aging process. It's harder for us to produce the different types of enzymes and digestion is harder. You know, we also tend to get really locked into our own little habits, right? We don't, maybe we're just like, oh, I don't feel like cooking. I had, you know, children in the house for so long and now I'm only going to eat popcorn for dinner. You know, like, I mean, whatever it is, like whatever.
I know plenty of popcorn eaters. Yes,
I know. You hear me out.
And I'm going to drink a bottle of wine with that popcorn.
Yeah. Or I'm just going to have a block of cheese and call it a night, you know, like whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
So obviously like how we eat. And so I just finished listening to this 2.5-hour podcast on gut health, talking about the bacteria that we have in our gut and the multitude of flora and fauna that we have. And so then we have to look at, you know, how do we keep that gut biome healthy? How do we feed those little microbes, right? And it doesn't matter really what age we are, right? We still can do a lot, even if you have to like biohack, right? Like let's say you're in your 70s, right? And maybe you like have some digestive issues and you don't absorb things well and whatever the reason is. I do think there are certain supplementation and biohacks that we can still access to give ourselves, even if we bump our systems, you know, and our gut biome up by another 30%. I mean, that would be like heaven for someone who's fighting something like long COVID, right? And so, but true reality, to be quite honest, most of my long COVID people are on the younger side. So the clinically speaking, yes, occasionally I will get someone who's older, but by and large, I'm seeing so many younger people. And I don't know if it's because they didn't have a lot of problems to begin with. And so when they do have a problem, it becomes blaringly obvious.
Yes.
Whereas the older population tends to have a little bit more problems in general. And so it may go missed a little bit more.
Right.
Right. Because they're going in for a bunch of other stuff. And then you add on a little fatigue on top of that. And they're just like, eh. Right. Yeah. Like, but I, you know, I don't want to downplay that because I want to just say that, like, you know, I feel like this is something we can access young or old.
Right. Right?
Young or old. I don't think that that matters.
Yes. So if you had someone come in and they were presenting the long COVID and they were having digestive issues and knowing everything that you just said to us about the gut and the brain and all that, what would be some things that you would add or maybe subtract to their diet from their diets that will help them with their microbiome? So like what, let's talk about what things that they shouldn't be doing first, because that's a good way to get that out of the way.
Oh, that's maybe a good one.
Let's take those things away and then let's give you these things that are going to make your gut microbiome grow bigger and stronger and better.
Yeah. So clinically,
Doritos.
Clinically, you know, I would say the majority of people I see with long COVID are really depleted. They're just all their resources. So in Chinese medicine, we really look at how do we finance our lives, right? What resources do we need to have internally to finance this external existence that we want to live, right? So qi, blood, and fluids, those are kind of our mainstay, right? How do we produce qi, blood, and fluids? It is by and large through the foods that we eat, right? So now this is putting aside if someone is having digestive issues, that may be a whole other ball of wax because we have to get into the nitty gritty of absorption. We have to get into the nitty gritty of supplementation. Maybe they're not able to hold things down. Nope. I had a long COVID patient, a really amazing young woman under the age of 20 who, after she got COVID, could not hold a single thing down, like would just vomit it back up. Boom.
Wow.
And it was getting to the point where they were talking about putting in a G tube.
Oh my gosh.
Right. Because things were so bad. I mean, rightly so, this kid is wasting away to nothing. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the work she and I did was with acupuncture to try to keep the vomiting and the nausea at a low level so that we could just get her to hold some stuff down. Right.
Right.
But also part of it was diet, right? She was kind of a typical teenager. She was eating a bunch of crap. And I was like, okie dokie, this is the stuff we're going to look at. So what I understand about the gut biome is that those bacteria in the gut, and there's like five that are really important. They actually feed almost primarily off of fiber.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm not talking green juice because you're not actually getting fiber from green juice. You're please getting,
please tell all the people in the back that, because all these bitches that are like, I just drink my green juice and that's where I get my greens. I'm like, honey, no, there's no fucking fiber in that. Like,
no fiber.
Read a book, bitch.
Yeah, no, no, you get nutrient density, right? And in Chinese medicine, when we do juicing, it's almost like what you would do, like if you took a Z-Pack, right? You would take it for a 7-day period or a whatever 2-week period of time, but really beyond those short limits of time, juicing is not necessarily a better way of absorbing nutrients, right? And everybody's got their own thing, and I could go into that into great detail because of the energetics of the food, you know, yada yada. Anyway, so you know, when we look at green juice, right, that's not really, and I see, you know, I would see a lot of these people that would come in and they would either be supplementing food, i.e. juicing, smoothies,
protein shakes,
which are all very chemical based in a big amount, because everybody's like, oh, I need to get my protein. And that's true. But you like need to nom, 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 chomp, 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 right? Yes. Like we need to actually like,
Mix the saliva with the food. So it starts to digest. Because people don't realize that digestion starts in the mouth.
In the mouth. It is so important. And in Chinese medicine, the chomping of the teeth is also really, really important for getting the digestive system primed and ready to go.
Interesting.
And firing up the fires that need to start digesting all the food that we're eating.
Wow. Cool.
Right. So that's crazy. So the like chomp chomp, it turns out these teeth come in handy.
Yeah. It's like the whole, it's the whole vestibular system, right? Yeah. Is it the vestibular system?
I don't think it's the vestibular system per se, but at least in Chinese medicine, we have, stomach fire and kidney fire and all these little aspects of kind of the yang portion of our body that need to be kind of inducted, right? And chomping of the teeth, when we bite like that, it starts the fire. So because the body knows like digestion is coming.
It's happening.
Right?
Chomp, chomp.
Yeah, it's happening.
Eat. Wow.
Yeah. So it's kind of an interesting little thing. So what we're really looking at is eating whole, like as close to the earth as possible, right? Yeah. So if it's the winter, which it is, we actually need to eat food that is cooked, right? Our food needs to be cooked. Raw foods are not a really good source of nutrient density in the wintertime. And so primarily, not only do we want those foods to be cooked because they're easier to digest, right? We do need to take it easy on the digestive system in the winter. We are using so many of our resources to keep ourselves warm, right? That it starts to be this play between, do I stay warm? Do I eat a salad? Do I stay warm? And you introduce a cold food, the digestive system starts to slow down.
Yes.
Right? It's not digesting as well. And obviously this is all based on Chinese medical philosophy.
Yeah.
You know, you put me in the room with a whole bunch of other physicians, we might have different perspectives on how this is going on. But
how would you wouldn't even get salad in the winter, literally nowhere.
Never. Never. Like if you looked at what was bioavailable to you. So I also live at altitude. And so altitude plays a whole other level on top of long COVID that you don't get down at sea level. But if you were to think about what is bioavailable in the winter, in traditional
root vegetables,
you have root vegetables, fermented foods.
Yes.
Fermented foods are so important. We have lost so much of our fermentation.
Right.
It used to be like in cultures, they would harvest in the fall.
Yeah.
They would pickle and ferment their foods, keep it in a root cellar.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would eat that all day long. Well, what are we talking about here? Microbiome, right? 75% of our immune system is in our gut.
Yeah.
What do you think all of those, like the biodiversity of pickled foods is enormous. It just feeds all that little biome that needs some of that nutrient density and creates this really healthy environment so that we're able to kick the viruses. We're able to produce like the serotonin that we need yes. for our good moods, like all those types of things, right? So eating as close to the earth as possible. By seasonal eating, I mean, like, for example, I live at, you know, 7,000 to 8,000 feet of altitude.
Yes.
You will not find a banana to be seen growing on any tree
nope.
for thousands of miles.
No, ma'am.
So you know what I prefer? I prefer if you live at altitude that you're not eating bananas in the winter.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
so
no tropical fruit
in Utah at 8,000 elevation.
Yeah, exactly. If you live in Florida, right? What grows in the winter? Citrus.
Yes.
That is because that vitamin C is really good for the immune system, right? That happens to be when citrus comes into bloom and into play, right? So if you're in Florida, you're probably not eating bananas either. Bananas are really a tropical fruit that happen in the warmest of the seasons. If you are sub-equator, yep, you're going to eat bananas. Go yep. for it. Have yep. a great time.
Knock yourself out.
You can have a good time, right?
You know what also, Autumn, to the point of the pickling thing, because I think, like, I grew up with a grandmother who fermented and made, you know, sauerkraut. Yeah. And when she made pickles, they were really fermented pickles. They weren't the yeah. shit that we get in the store now that's like,
yes.
has like the yellow dyes and all this stuff. To
yeah,
keep
no,
it,
no, no.
Like, whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that's another thing, too, is people go, oh, I eat pickles all the time. It's like, no, but you don't eat real.
No.
And there are companies now, like I go to Whole Foods and I get all kinds of fermented stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels so good for me. Like it jives with my body.
Right.
But a lot of people say like, oh, I have pickles. And I was like, no, dude, but it's not like the,
right.
you're eating like a Claussen sandwich snacker.
Right.
You're not eating like a real old fashioned pickle that's fermented and has all the lactobacillus and all that kind
of
stuff.
Well, one of the things I can say that I do like about some of those pickles, even if you're getting Claussens, because by the way, they are so good.
They're so good, man. I know.
But one of the things that I do like about the brines that they use for things like Claussens is often they have a lot of garlic.
Mm-hmm.
And garlic is really nature's antibiotic.
Yes, it is.
I mean, it is one of the most powerful antiviral, antibacterial, antifungal agent that you can get out there. I mean, truly. So if you're going to eat, you know, fermented foods, you can actually ferment, you can do pickled garlic, right? You can do like, but most of those brines have garlic in it for good reason. It turns out our grandparents know a lot about a lot. Right?
Yeah.
Like they kind of had some things figured out. So thank you for that.
Amen.
You know, older generations passing that great brilliance down.
But we've lost it though. We've lost it as a society.
Yeah.
Like, and no one, it's funny because like now, like these homesteading type wives on TikTok and on like, everyone's like, oh my God, could you imagine? It's like, dude, this is how our grandmothers lived. Like, and they were fucking happy.
Yeah.
And they didn't have all the crazy shit, and they're not dealing with all the crazy shit that we deal with as, you know, modern women in 2024.
Right. So the things, you know, the original question that you asked me, not to get like so far
in the weeds.
I could keep going.
I know, and I love it.
Yeah. But the things that I usually recommend to people. So when we're having a good, healthy biome, the things as a general topic whole that we want to look at, cooked foods, because they are easier for the digestive system to process.
Yes.
Soups and stews are an amazing way to get good nutrient density. You know, we happen to be in the winter right now, but you know, even in the summer, if you're really struggling to try to digest things, soups and stews are a perfectly great way to do that.
Yes.
Porridges are a really good way to nourish the fluids, you know, so any sort of like oatmeals, there's a type of porridge called congee, which is a really, amazing. I love congee.
I love it.
So many iterations of congee. Mm-hmm. Congee is what I often will give people when they are super, super depleted, super fast and easy to digest. It is so easy to make. And you can add things like scallions and ginger, which is a stomach harmonizer. Mm-hmm. Scallions gives the body a little bit of energy because it has this kind of like yang energy. Scallions also have this really amazing property to help help the immune system, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, we can find, so congee is one of the things I often will say to people. So cooked foods, fermented foods, congees. I really prefer that people eat meat And I know this is, I'm sure there's going to be some controversy about it.
No, everyone's pretty down with the meat, man. Like I was a raw vegan for 5 years.
Yeah.
And I was the sickest, the unhealthiest, the saddest, mopiest bitch I've ever been in my life. But I was doing it because I wasn't doing it for health. I actually was, it was like a spiritual awakening for me.
Right, right.
And I was like, the animals.
Yeah.
But then I just chose, as I started to eat meat again, and I actually worked with an acupuncturist who was also, she would make tinctures.
Yes.
And she made me a tincture to actually crave meat, which I thought, this is crazy.
That's interesting. Yeah, yeah. That's super interesting.
Because I would like look at meat and I'd be like, I can't. I would get like repulsed by it.
Right.
And after a while, I'll never forget, this is a true story. I was having a dinner party at my house and the people were like big meat eaters. And I was like, oh, if I have to, I will. I'll cook it. And I was making ossobuco.
Uh-huh.
And then I was like making some pathetic vegetarian dish for myself on the side. And I just started like, the meat came out of the oven and I just started devouring
it. Oh, yeah.
But it was like mindless. And my husband's like, what the fuck are you doing? And I was like, I don't know. I can't. I just gonna eat this meat. And I like lost like 60 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
I felt so good. My brain was functioning. It was just like everything that I was so missing in my life was all because of the meat. But I just choose, and the girls out there in Ambitious Land also are with me with this. It's like, if you are going to eat meat, fish, poultry, whatever, just make sure it's the best you can get, grass-fed, all that stuff.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. And, you know, and it's not, we don't need to eat a ton of it. It's, you know, you're talking about medallion size, you know, like couple times
a week. You're not bodybuilding. You're not getting ready for Mr. Olympia.
But we need, so there's some really, really important nutrient density that happens in red meat in particular. Mm-hmm. And red meat is the number one building block for red blood cells. And those red blood cells, let me tell you how important those red blood cells are. I mean, those red blood cells are critical for brain function. They are critical for memory. They are critical for sleeping. They are, you know, not to mention the fact that, you know, meat has an incredible amount of B vitamins, you know, the amino acids. Like, it, you know, I feel like meat has gotten a really bad rap over the more recent past. And I just, you know, I want to say to people, like, meat is not the enemy, right? We, maybe if we're eating it in gross quantities, that's not healthy, right? Like, nothing in any gross quantity is healthy, including kale, right? So, so like we, you know, like, I mean, like, we want to really be thoughtful about, so I want everybody to have really big variety is super important, right? Depending on where you live, if you live at altitude, you need a little bit more red meat than if you live at sea level, you can get away with a lot more fish, right?
Wow.
So that's that, because that's what's available to you and your body's going to be fine. You don't need, you know, at altitude, you need to make more red blood cells.
Right.
We actually need to increase the volume of blood we have at altitude. What's the number one way to do that? Red meat. So, so anyway, so we think about those things, but the things that are really critical, huge variety, you know, making sure you're eating what is available in your area. So if you live in Ecuador and you want to eat mangoes, by all means. If you are living in Boston and you want to eat mangoes, I would reconsider, right? Like, I mean, it's like that kind of stuff. Like, think about what sorts of things you're going to find in the region that you live in, because that's what's going to nourish you the most.
If you come to Boston, you're just going to eat clam chowder.
I love clam chowder.
Who doesn't?
So good.
Who doesn't?
But you know, so those are like in the how-tos, we want cooked foods, biodiversity. We want to make sure that we're not having too many chemicals in our diet. That includes diet cokes. That includes protein powders in your smoothies. That includes like whatever other shelf things you have in your house that have an expiration date that's longer than a year, you know, like any of those things, we just want to get rid of those.
Right.
So the things that can be really challenging on the body, sugar is really, really challenging on the body for a number of different levels. That is the hardest thing for most people to cut, to be quite honest, you know?
Right. But it causes, sugar causes so much acidosis in the body. And it can, and when you're in an acidic state, that's when your immune system is weaker,
right?
And it's easier to penetrate,
right?
Right. Yeah. So if you alkalize yourself, you'll be probably stronger immune system wise.
I was one of the herbalists that I studied with, and I would have to check to see if there's actually been actual studies done on it, because I don't know. But she was saying that, you know, for every teaspoon of sugar, which is approximately 4 grams. So when you look on your box and you're looking at how many grams of sugar in there, one teaspoon of sugar can tank your immune system for up to 4 hours.
Holy shit.
Right.
So imagine all these people that are like, I have 3 cups of coffee with 2 spoonfuls of sugar in every.
Right.
I mean, why does everybody get sick
over the holidays? Right. We eat a shit ton of sugar and we drink a ton.
It's flu season. It's not flu season. It's Halloween.
Yeah.
Raped my ass with all the candy.
Then we go into
Thanksgiving, having to be around all the people that we don't like, which lowers our immune system and all the sugar and all the shit. Then we go into Christmas.
Right.
Then we go into New Year. And then wait a minute.
Right.
We can't really clean up our diet because guess what? Valentine's Day is coming. So it's like this whole, from freaking October to February, everyone's fucked and they don't know why. And they just say, oh, it's flu season.
Yeah. No, but there's so many ways to enhance your immune system. Right. So we're not just talking about long COVID. We're talking about the generality of the immune system overall. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when we look at sugar, the way that it affects the body on so many levels, it also feeds the wrong type of bacteria in the body.
Yes.
It's not doing anybody any favors. So like, if there's one thing that you're going to choose, right, it's like, try scrubbing sugar and eating a little bit more of a biodiverse diet that's as close to the earth as possible. Like that in and to itself is already going to make huge changes in someone's life. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the other thing I look at, and this is a little bit controversial because I don't want to get, you know, I don't like to overly restrict when it comes
to
someone's food.
You know me.
Yes, you too.
You know me.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is, in some people, and it really depends on the person and their underlying conditions, gluten can be a really, really big one for people.
I was just going to ask you about that.
It can slow down the digestive pathways. Some people really struggle with it as a sensitivity. They don't even know that it's a sensitivity. They're like, nom, 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 right? And they are trying their best and they're like, but I eat sourdough, right? And I love that. And I encourage most people to do that. But anybody who, you know, and here's the hard part. When they come into my clinic, and I say to them, you know, how's your digestion? And they say, it's good. But what does that mean? Right? What does digestion actually mean?
I shit like once a week. I'm like, that is not good digestion.
Not good digestion.
Madam.
Right. Yeah. And so I have a girlfriend who's an integrative nutritionist I work with here in Utah. And she's absolutely amazing. And this is the graphic part. So anybody who doesn't like to talk about
poop,
we like to talk about. Okay.
Yeah,
so
she
says, you know, one of the things she talks about, she says, when you have a bowel movement, you literally want to look at the length from your fist to your elbow. It should be about that long and that big. That's right. Yeah.
That's dropping a deuce. That's laying some pipe. Literally.
That's it, right?
Whoa.
Yeah.
In one sitting, you just sit and you shit that big?
Yes.
Oh my Lord. I'm screwed. I need to go eat some
more
food.
Fiber. Yeah. they say in order to feed the good microbiome, we need on average 20 to 30 grams of fiber a day.
Wow. Okay.
Right? So 20
Not
to 30
a lot of
grams
are
of fiber.
That.
The average American, do you want to guess?
Tell me. I don't even want to because I know it's going to piss me off.
I know it's totally going to piss
like
you off.
Like 10 grams?
I wish.
What?
Yeah.
Shut up. Really?
Between 1 and 2 grams of fiber a day.
No.
I know. It's so, it's like it's a rough one. So think about that. Like if you, you know, for my patients who are struggling, right? Because we want to increase the biodiversity of their gut biome, we want to look at 20 to 30 grams of fiber a day. That means I want people to have fruits and vegetables, breakfast, lunch, and dinner,
and
right?
Like you do snacks too. Yeah.
You know, I'm not a huge snack person,
I'm
but
not
if
either.
Someone is a snacker, then by all means, like throw in some like hummus and whatever, right? Like I don't care. Like they need to think about, I know this is already, I can hear it happening. Like somewhere in the ether, someone is hearing this and they're going, what? How am I going to eat that much fiber? You know, but it doesn't, and you don't have to necessarily have it in salad, right? And that is our go-to. Salads are fine. We want to be careful about that cold element and slowing down the digestive system,
right?
Especially if you're digestively compromised because
so salads
of COVID.
Are good in like the summer. You like when salad stuff will actually be coming into your garden. That's when you should eat that. Kind
that's
of
when
stuff.
You should eat it. Or you know, like depending on where you live. Like if you live in California, you can probably access salad pretty regularly because of the warmer temperatures.
Right, right.
You know, it's just, it's more available to you. But we have a lot of fiber. Like I have to look this up. I don't have anything up right now because I'm talking to you, but
that's fine.
I'd have to look it up to see. But I heard someone telling me the other day that one pear has almost our entire daily percentage of fiber. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true.
So think about it. Like, you just have to be smart about what you're eating.
A pear?
What pear?
You know what it is too? I also was like raised in an ethnic family. So like we ate vegetables like literally with every meal. Like we didn't eat like a lot of boxed things. I wasn't raised that way, you know?
Right.
So I didn't start eating like stupid shit until I went away to college. And I was like, oh my God, you can get Papa John's at 2 a.m. after you're hammered.
Right.
This is amazing.
Right. Yeah.
And then that's when I gained weight, which I think every kid does when they go to college too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is true. Like a pear is probably that amount of fiber in a day. So think about how small that is to the normal, everyday, average American person.
Yeah. I mean, I always like to tell people, like, I want you to have fruits and vegetables, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And they're like, well, what would I eat for breakfast?
Oh my God.
Like, I don't know what I do. Avocado toast with some tomato sliced on there, like a little bit of olive oil.
I mean, what I love?
Have some olives.
Yeah, I do that. Yeah. I also do like cauliflower rice, like fried rice in the morning with like eggs and different veggies and stuff like that. That's awesome. But I love the avocado toast. I love all that kind of stuff. I love it. It's not that hard, man.
Yeah. It's just thinking differently about what you're eating and how you're eating it. And I think that's a big part of it. So when it comes to long COVID, you know, we are looking at how important the microbiome and the gut biome is, and the resources that we gain from the food that we eat has so much to do with how we feel emotionally. Yes. Mm-hmm. It has so much to do with how we're managing our stress. It has so much to do with the resources that we are building in order to then recover from a virus that not only kicked our ass the first time, but then kicked up a couple of other viruses in the meantime, right? So when we're looking at, you know, if there's anything that people are going to want to do for themselves, that's it. It is, it's the biodiversity of food. And it is so important, right? Like if anything they can do at home, that is a big one.
Can I ask you two questions?
Sure.
One, what about dairy? Two, what about alcohol? Because I know all of these bitches out here are going to be like, I can't drink my bottle of wine every night after I beat my children.
Is that what they're saying?
Yeah. Yes. Unfortunately.
Oh, I love it.
Yes.
So it is
because I know some people can handle dairy and I know some people can't.
Yeah.
I know some people can drink a bottle of wine and they don't even get a hangover. If I have one glass, I'm like fucked for 2 days.
Yeah.
So I don't even drink.
So we have to be really thoughtful about our detox system, right? So our detox system is another pathway that we haven't really talked about thus far in this conversation. Mm-hmm. But the detox pathway that we create is how we also get rid of viruses, right?
Yeah.
So we have to think, we need, you know, the liver and the kidneys and the bladder and the intestines, all those things that are moving things out of our body, right? Those pathways are really, really critical in making sure that we are discarding anything that is toxic in the body. When we start to increase our diet and we're really making such an important effort to increase our nutrient density, we don't want to slow that process down by complicating the system. So non-nutritive sweeteners, those are a really important thing to avoid, right?
So like no Equal, no Splenda, no Sweet and Low, not even Stevia.
No, none of it. Because what happens is we don't really know how, because there's a lot of things that are saying that we have a really difficult time detoxing those chemicals from the body. They can just stick around and hang out in the liver. We need that liver to be moving and healthy to get rid of all this toxicity, right? Yes. And part of that viral load is how we detox, right? So if we're detoxing, and I am not a fan of juice fast. Let me be really clear.
Yes.
Anybody who has been taken down by long COVID, the last thing they need to do is some juice fast.
Yes.
It's not making anything better. In fact, it'll probably make things worse.
Right.
Right. So we want to be careful about how we think about detoxification. The first way we can think about it is how do we just free up those pathways?
Yes.
Alcohol is just going to slow the system down. It's just, we have to detox it every time we drink it. It doesn't matter what kind we're drinking. If you are drinking alcohol, the body has to detox it.
That's right. If
you have a big viral load, to be quite honest, most of the people I see for long COVID, they're not even feeling good enough to have a glass of wine.
Yeah, no. They're not trying to get litty like a titty on a Saturday night. No. They can't even get out of bed, some of them.
They can't even get out of bed. The last thing they're thinking about is trying to overload the system. Yes. But let's say you're like that person who's got long COVID and you're somewhere in between, right? Alcohol's not doing any favors until your body is really up and running and you've kind of gotten rid of that viral load. We really want to minimize and eliminate, if possible, any of that alcohol for 2 or 3 months while you're kind of working on revamping. You know, sugar, obviously, because it's feeding the wrong microbes in your gut. It's just not helping you any. It's tanking your immune system. No bueno. Non-nutritive sweeteners, they're not doing you any favors, right? So people are like, oh, but I just like a little something sweet. Get some really good dark chocolate.
Yeah.
Right? You can have really good dark chocolate and in fact, dark chocolate has copper in it, which is a good blood circulator.
Yes.
Hey, we actually need that good blood circulation in the body when we've got illness going on. I'm A-okay with dark chocolate. I mean, now don't get me wrong. When my grandfather was alive, I told him once that dark chocolate was good for him. So every day he was like eating like a bunch of dark chocolate. And he was
a whole bar.
And meanwhile, he would never listen to anything else I had to say. But that one, he was like, but my granddaughter could eat dark chocolate, you know?
God bless
him. If you need something sweet, go for a little bit of dark chocolate. You know, be creative with like a poached pear and cardamom and like all that good stuff in there, right? So be creative with cooking some of your fruit and making some
like
of these
compote or something.
You know, and often when you detox from sugar, when you put it back in your diet, it often doesn't taste good.
It's like overwhelming.
It can be really overwhelming. So a lot of times a dark chocolate, you know, a really good fruit, those are going to be really good ways. When it comes to dairy, oh, it's so hard. Dairy is tricky. I'm going to say, if you're a person that typically and traditionally does not have any sort of lactose intolerance or any sort of major digestive issues surrounding long COVID, plain yogurt has, you don't want the kind with a lot of sugar in it because what's the point? You're completely deactivating all the enzymes that are in there. If you are going to have yogurt, absolutely, you're going to enjoy it. Please do. Have some yogurt, put some fruit on there. I actually like the sourness of plain yogurt. I don't have any problems with it.
Yeah,
so, you know, kind of like find a fun way to, but we're not talking on a daily basis. Like if you're going to have some yogurt, like twice a week, right? Yes. Like we're not diving in head first and you're like, but it's got protein. Yeah. It's going to constipate you like nobody's business.
Yeah.
Right. So dairy is one of those things in general, we use it as a treat. Right. So if you can digest it, if your body's okay with it, use it as something that you enjoy from time to time. We don't need to cook with it all the time.
See how we've been brainwashed though, Autumn, like that this is like a every day you have an acai bowl or a big bowl of yogurt with fruit and granola and honey and all this shit. And it's like,
yeah.
This is the problem because your body doesn't know the difference between a Snickers bar sugar. Mm-hmm. Or the sugar that, so it's going to do this, your body's going to metabolize it the same exact way. That's why I always tell people and they're like, no, I don't think that's true. I'm like, okay,
but it
fuck
is.
Fuck me. Yeah. Whatever.
Well, and if someone is eating the acai bowl or they're eating that ton of fruit and things with it and oats, they are getting a good amount of fiber. And the fiber part of it, as we kind of talked about before, is really important for that gut biome. You know, eating healthy isn't necessarily a smoothie every day. Right. I get so many people who have digestive problems, very slow digestive system. And they're like, but I eat a smoothie every morning. And I'm like, that's not helping.
Yeah. Because you're drinking it and your saliva, like you were saying, the chomping, the saliva, none of that stuff is activated to start your digestive process.
Right.
Because you're
it's
just
also cold. It's also cold. Yes. Right. Yes. So it's very, it's like takes more digestive fire.
Yeah,
to like
no one's
get
warming
the juices
up a smoothie.
Going, right? A lot of times people will be like, oh, but I throw kale in there. Well, P.S. Kale is a goitrogenic, right? Kale and spinach need to be cooked in order for them to be bioavailable.
I can't even eat kale, and I'm Portuguese, and kale is like our life. I cannot have kale. I can't have Swiss chard, and I can't have spinach because I used to eat all that shit like crazy when I was younger. Yeah. I couldn't bend my fingers.
Oh, totally.
It started to like crystallize in my body.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I was having all of these weird things. The one thing I did was I cut out all the oxalate stuff.
Right. Yeah.
My body changed within 2 weeks.
Yeah. And there's definitely stuff to go with that and support that. But, you know, in a smoothie, again, it's a treat, right? Like in the middle of summer, you want to have a couple smoothies a week. Have a great time. Yeah. I add cacao nibs to mine. Mm. I don't, you know, I usually put in like avocado and I put in, you know, tons of fresh berries and peaches and whatever I can find. Yes. And it is delicious. And I highly encourage you to enjoy the deliciousness of a smoothie, you know, in the summer a couple times a week. It is not a mainstay and it's not a substitution. And you have to have that digestive system moving to feed that gut biome so that we can get rid of all this like crap in our system so that we're no longer, you know, fighting. So, just like quick fun fact.
Yeah.
So you know, I feel like weight, you know, how much we weigh is a deciding factor in so many food decisions that we make.
Yeah.
Right. And I feel like, unfortunately, so many marketing companies have capitalized on what it means to be healthy, quote unquote healthy, and that is i.e. skinny, right? And that's just not really true, right? And so we need to find this really sweet balance between being healthy, having longevity being the main goal, right? Longevity is about the not having disease, right? We basically want to live as long as possible in the absence of disease, right? That is the ultimate.
Yes.
When it comes to healthy, we get so many conflicting messages about what healthy means, right? And I think that's like a topic of conversation I could have for an hour in into itself.
Yes, of course.
But here's something really, really valuable that I think people will be very important to hear. So there's a period of time recently that they've been doing something called fecal transplants.
Oh man, I love this. Yes. God, yes.
Okay. So fecal transplants often happen. Let's say you get C. diff or some gnarly infection. Mm-hmm. They started using something called, you know, fecal transplants, which is exactly what it sounds like, meaning they're taking poop from one person's body and putting it in another person's body.
Love it.
What they have found is that microbiome, the health of a microbiome often determines someone's weight.
Yeah.
So what they found, if you took a fecal transplant from a person who was obese into someone who was skinny, that person would become obese after they got this transplantation.
Oh my God.
And vice versa.
What?
So they're starting to do all these studies on looking at whether or not they think obesity may or may not be linked to our microbiome and how healthy that microbiome is.
Holy balls.
Right?
So what do? They take the poop. Do they shove it up the person's ass?
Sometimes.
Or do they put it in a pill and they make you swallow the poop pill?
Yes, both. What? They do both. Yes.
No.
Yes, I know they do. But listen, like, you know, we're talking about when you're clinically like on the brink of death.
You'll do anything.
And you're like, you want me to swallow a poop pill? I'll swallow a poop
pill, like,
right?
Eat like, my shit, like the friggin' help. Remember that? Eat my shit. Yes.
Yeah,
I will.
No, it's like so crazy. So all that to say, and obviously this is like research they're doing, you know, there's nothing definitive that's being like taken out of this research. But what I got out of that and hearing that was how important our gut biome is for our health and how much what we do in our life and how we function depends on the health of that gut biome. Whether we are skinny or not skinny, like with long COVID, you know, because of all the work we're doing on the microbiome and the gut, you know, the treatments I do in acupuncture, there's these treatments called goo treatments. Goo is the type of qi that is produced in the stomach, right? That is disseminated over the body. So there's actual you know, Chinese medical treatments that have been around for thousands of years that have looked at the annihilation of the gut from these viruses and these bacteria that come in and kind of wipe out our healthy gut. So, you know, it's not to say that this is a fad. It's not, you know, whether or not you need to go gluten-free, that one's one that you have to start to contend with, you know, whether or not we eat dairy or don't eat dairy. I think the primary focus is looking at our own body function and feeding our body in the best way possible so that we are increasing the biodynamics of our gut biome, so that we're increasing our immune system and our ability to resist viruses, so that we don't end up with long COVID in the first place. But then if we do end up with long COVID, we want to say, okay, this is one way that I can influence my health and start to work on recreating that diversity so that we may in fact be able to move the needle a little bit.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. After we get off this podcast today, I'm going to go eat like 50 probiotics. And then I'm going to ask someone if I could eat their poop. Like a skinny, like a supermodel. Like I'm going to call like Gigi Hadid and like, can you send me your shit? Like, I'm going to eat
just
it.
Just PS, right? So do you want to know? So the Chinese, they were the very first ones that came up with these fecal transplants.
Do you want to know
what it's called in the classics?
Please tell me.
It's called yellow soup.
No, not yellow soup. Gross. Oh my Lord. Not yellow soup, Autumn.
No, I know. No, it has to have another name. It does.
We got to talk to these people. We got to rebrand. We got to rebrand this. This needs a total free fresh rebrand.
I know. It's oh like, God. I know. There's nothing.
We need to make it more appetizing than yellow soup. Oh my God.
I know. But anyway, but like, you know, so anyway, I feel like if, you know, if I were to draw it back and say, okay, if we can come full circle, right, and say to those people who are experiencing what they think is long COVID, you know, they've gone through, they've seen their doctors, they've had all the tests, they've looked at all the things, and they're kind of still sitting around scratching their heads. You know, whether or not you're going for tests, whether or not you can still do, you can still work on your gut, regardless of whether or not you have a diagnosis.
That's right.
Right.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the most important thing to take out of this. You know, obviously acupuncture, I see a lot of success with acupuncture and helping people regain their resources. You know, we are, you know, so it's not just one or the other. Most of the time when I'm working with someone with long COVID, we're working on their gut. Often we have to supplement because they're just struggling digestive wise to even absorb what it is that they're eating, you know, and then you use like, whether it's acupuncture, you know, some people are going to do herbs, right? Like depending on where you are and who your practitioner is, those things are going to be a little bit different for each person. But just to know that they exist, that they are an option, and that these are things that you can make choices on and do for yourself that don't require a diagnosis. These are things that if you think that the after you've already gone through the whole chain, right? And you say, okay, I'm still stuck. Give it a try, right? Like there, you don't lose a thing. You don't lose a thing.
I love it. And people can work with you if they feel like they have long COVID, so they can reach out to you.
Yes.
Tell people where they can reach out to you. Cause I know you have an email and I know you have your website and Instagram and all that stuff. So what is the best way that people can reach out to you if they listen to this and they say, oh my God, this woman just, everything I'm dealing with right now, she just nailed it. And like, this is amazing. And I feel so heard and validated. I'm going to reach out to Autumn and I'm going to work with her because this is what you do.
Yeah, this is what I do. So, you know, I'm happy if they want to send me an email at, you know, autumn@autumnbear.com. I'm happy to take a look. And, you know, I know that most people aren't going to be able to be on my table, but I can definitely do a consult with them. I can definitely sit down and talk and look at their symptoms and say, okay, what have you done? What haven't you done? How can we get you to see whether it's the right physician? Because you still need to go through a certain avenue, and I can help them find, you know, whether it's finding the right practitioner, looking at their diet, having a look at, you know, maybe finding an acupuncturist in their area, right? I'm happy to help source what I do know and how I know they can access it. in hopes of maybe pointing them in the right direction to give them some relief so that they're not suffering anymore. And that's really what it comes down to.
I love that. And also, guys, for you out there listening, you can scroll down in the show notes wherever you consume this podcast, and all of Autumn's information will be there as well. So you can contact her, go on her website. I know that you're also going to be launching your app soon, which is so exciting.
Yeah.
You have some really cool stuff coming down the pipeline that I just know that people are just going to love.
Yes.
This was, I mean, listen, I know a lot about health. I've been in this industry for 25 years, but every time I talk to you, you just like validate what I already know, or you bring so much new information to the table, and it's just always titillating. Always titillating.
But I
love this because I know for myself, I deal with so many clients that I know are going through something that is not mental. Or
right.
It's not psychological. It's not right. Spiritual. It's not even energetic. This is like something is in their body that has wreaked havoc
right.
That not a lot of people know about. And a lot of them are getting gaslit by, you know, doctors, and not even because the doctors are gaslighters, because they really
right.
just don't know.
They just don't know. And that's, you know, and that's part of the challenge we're all facing, you know, and I think as long as if I can share a little bit of information and someone hears that and says, you know what, I'm going to give this a go. And that even makes a fractional difference in how they move the needle to be a little bit better, to feel a little bit better, then it's a win, right? And
huge.
Until we figure out more.
Absolutely. Oh my God, this was so good. We could talk for literally days.
I know.
Oy, oy, oy. Especially about that yellow soup chat. I'm going to have nightmares tonight, let me tell you. Oh my God. This was awesome. Autumn, thank you for taking all this time out of your busy, busy life to do this. And I know the girls just absolutely love it. And I cannot wait for all the women that are ambitious from all across the globe to reach out to you and heal themselves and just become better and stronger, more sovereign, autonomous women. So I appreciate you. We appreciate you. We love you. Thank you. Guys, if you loved this podcast, if it brought so much value to your life, please share it. Reach out to Autumn. And in the meantime, don't forget to stay ambitious. And I will see you next Tuesday.